My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. I'm an author, speaker, and podcaster. I'm dedicated to empowering people to manifest their values of compassion and wellness in their everyday lives. You can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting joyfulvegan.com.
Ethical vegetarianism outside of religious doctrine is not some newfangled novel idea. It harkens back thousands of years, and at its core is compassion, a universal principle grounded in religious and secular philosophies, resonating with men, women, and children all around the world, all across the ages. Many people think of veganism as a new reactionary trend against what we call factory farming. But for centuries, men and women have been thinking about, writing about, and expressing distress over the violence inherent in killing animals for human use and consumption. My personal veganism is part of a long continuum of men and women from ancient times until today who stopped eating animals and their eggs and milk, not because they witnessed a modern, mechanized, industrialized factory system, but because they didn't want to be part of the brutal and unnecessary process of turning sentient animals into butchered bodies. Sixth century philosopher Pythagoras abstained from the flesh of animals and advised his followers to do the same out of a sense of justice, not only for ourselves and our ancestors, he fervently believed in the transmigration of souls, but also for the animals themselves. Though we have no primary written texts of Pythagoras, the Pythagorean doctrine has been well pieced together from secondary sources, including Ovid's 9th century poem, Metamorphoses, in which he tells us that Pythagoras urged his acolytes to eat, quote, food that requires no bloodshed and no slaughter. Pythagoreanism was the word used to describe the abstention from animal-based meat right up until the 19th century. That's how influential Pythagoras was. Pythagoras was the first of many secular philosophers to contend that the killing of animals for consumption desensitizes us to the suffering of both human and non-human animals. Greek historian and essayist Plutarch, who lived from 46 to 120 AD, maintained this line of reasoning when he asked in his essay On the Eating of Flesh, who could wrong a human being when he found himself so gently and humanely disposed toward other non-human creatures? He saw no difference, Plutarch saw no difference between sadistic cruelty and customary butchery, declaring that the person who, quote, tortures a living creature is no worse than he who slaughters it outright, and that, quote, insensitivity and cruelty toward humankind follow savage exhibitions in the theater. For what sort of dinner is not costly for which a living creature loses its life, end quote. Similarly, it wasn't factory farms that 3rd century Greek philosopher Porphyry had on his mind when he wrote about the, quote, injustice of carnivorism in his essay on abstinence from animal food. Recognizing the fact that we have no physiological requirement for the flesh of animals, he lamented that we, quote, deliver animals to be slaughtered and cooked and thus be filled with murder, not for the sake of nutriment and satisfying the wants of nature, but making pleasure and gluttony the end of such conduct, end quote. Thus to do so, he wrote, is, quote, transcendentally iniquitous and dire. These anti-violence, pro-vegetarian sentiments did not occupy only our ancient predecessors. Modern Western figures, from artists and writers to scientists and politicians, were equally revolted by the slaughter and consumption of animals. Several prominent names stand out. In his 1516 novel called Utopia, about what an ideal society looks like, Thomas More wrote that the Utopians, quote, feel that slaughtering our fellow creatures gradually destroys the sense of compassion, which is the finest sentiment of which our human nature is capable. In 1736, French Enlightenment writer Voltaire attacked the, quote, barbarous custom of supporting ourselves upon the flesh and blood of beings like ourselves. Influential English philosopher David Hartley asserted, quote, taking away the lives of animals in order to convert them into food does great violence to the principles of benevolence and compassion. Percy Shelley, a vocal 19th century vegetarian, wrote passionately about many things, including the injustice of breeding animals only to kill them. He wrote, quote, "If the use of animal food be, in consequence, subversive to the peace of human society, how unwarrantable is the injustice and the barbarity which is exercised toward these miserable victims." French poet Lamartine wrote movingly in the mid-1800s about growing up vegetarian, agreeing with his mother's conviction that, quote, "to kill animals for the purpose of feeding on their flesh is one of the most deplorable and shameful infirmities of the human state." 19th century German composer Richard Wagner attributed his philosophy of fellow suffering not only to his vegetarianism, but also to the wellspring of his art. Celebrated Russian novelist and vegetarian advocate Leo Tolstoy wrote that his 1885 conversion to vegetarianism was based on the belief that eating animals is simply immoral for the sole reason that it involves the performance of an act which is contrary to moral feeling, killing. And the list goes on and on and continues into this, the 21st century. All that is to say, it is not how we breed, keep, and kill animals for human consumption that has been the impetus for vegetarianism for thousands of years. It is that we breed, keep, and kill animals for human consumption. Throughout the centuries, the common thread in the arguments against eating animals is the fact that since we have no nutritional requirement for the flesh or fluids of animals, killing them to simply satisfy our taste buds or habits or customs amounts to senseless slaughter. And senseless slaughter is no small thing. And so when I became vegan, I recognized, as so many others have before me, that the most rational, merciful, and obvious way to reflect my compassion for animals was to not eat them. The same compassion that penetrated Plutarch's heart penetrates mine. It is different neither in substance nor degree. The only difference between me and my compassionate forebears is the word we use to describe our desire to avoid causing someone else to suffer when we have the power to do so. From the time of Pythagoras in the 6th century all the way up to the 19th century, a Pythagorean diet signified one that was based on plants. That's what it was called. In the 18th and 19th centuries, proponents of the Pythagorean way often referred to it as a, quote, vegetable diet or vegetable regimen, although these are somewhat misleading phrases in that adherents did not subsist on vegetables alone, but also grains, fruits, nuts, seeds, legumes, and fungi. The word vegetarian first appeared in print in the Healthian magazine in 1842, though it is clear from its context that it would have been familiar to its audience by that time, leading etymologists to surmise that it was in use by at least the 1830s. And then, in the middle of the 20th century, in reaction to the word vegetarian, a young British animal activist named Donald Watson conceived a new word to better convey the ethics behind the diet. Watson was born in 1910 and died 95 years later in the northern region of England called Yorkshire. Intentional vegetarianism was not exactly widespread in the rural meat-eating community in which he grew up, but when asked about his journey to becoming vegan, Watson would speak of his childhood memories of seeing and hearing animals slaughtered or being dragged along alleyways to the butcher. He would speak about his visits to his Uncle George's farm, where various animals were kept and used. They all gave something, he recalled in an interview. The farm horse pulled the plow. The lighter horse pulled the trap. The cows gave milk. The hens gave eggs. The cockerel was a useful alarm clock. The sheep gave wool. I could never understand what the pigs gave, but they seemed such friendly creatures, always glad to see me. Then the day came when one of the pigs was killed. I still have vivid recollections of the whole process, including the screams, of course. One thing that shocked me was that my Uncle George, of whom I thought very highly, was part of the crew. I decided that farms and uncles had to be reassessed. The idyllic scene was nothing more than death row, where every creature's days were numbered by the point at which it was no longer of service to human beings. And so, repelled by violence and compelled by compassion, Watson became vegetarian and eventually vegan. A sensible response to the violence he witnessed on the small farms characteristic of his time and locale. That is to say, Watson did not stop eating animals because of industrialized slaughterhouses or the concentrated animal feeding operations that define today's meat, dairy, and egg industries. He saw even small-scale animal agriculture for what it is: exploitative, ugly, messy, unpredictable, difficult, cruel, and bloody. Not as the romanticized thing we've made it out to be when we talk about returning to small family farms. Watson went on to co-found the Vegan Society, the first vegan organization in the United Kingdom, which is still active today. A group called the Vegetarian Society was already in place by that time, having been founded in 1847, and was responsible for popularizing the word vegetarian, which originally referred to a plant-based diet that excluded all animal products, both flesh and secretions. Over time, however, diets called vegetarian began to include and embrace the consumption of eggs and animals' milk. Disheartened by this, Donald Watson set out to create a more concise word to describe ethical vegetarians who ate no animal products at all. And so in 1944, he, along with his wife Dorothy, decided on the word vegan by taking the first three and the last two letters of vegetarian, because, as Watson explained, veganism starts with vegetarianism and carries it through to its logical conclusion. Watson emphasized its pronunciation as vegan, not vegan or vegan or vegan, and wrote its definition: a philosophy and way of living which seeks to exclude, as far as is possible and practical, all forms of exploitation of and cruelty to animals for food, clothing, or any other purpose. The word was accepted by the Oxford English Dictionary, and there it remains, alive and increasing in recognition. The word has gained traction in the public consciousness, especially in recent years, but misunderstandings still prevail about what it actually means, particularly the misconception that being vegan is about striving to be perfect, as if there is such a thing as a 100% pure certified vegan. Even Watson anticipated this when he clarified, as far as is possible and practical. I think one of the reasons people tend to equate veganism with perfection is that they're operating under the mistaken idea that being vegan is an end in itself. And so you find non-vegans trying to catch vegans in all the ways they're imperfect, stepping on insects while walking, driving a car whose tires contain animal products, wearing leather shoes left over from their pre-vegan days. And vegans, too, beating themselves up for accidentally eating something that contains eggs, or for not being able to afford to replace the leather couch they bought just before becoming vegan. But all of this entirely misses the point about what it means to be vegan. Being vegan is not an end in itself. It's a means to an end, and that end is compassion. Doing our best to not contribute to violence against animals when it is possible and practical. Being vegan is a powerful and effective means toward attaining that end, but it is not the end in itself. For The Animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. If you like what you've heard today, please visit me at joyfulvegan.com, where you can find everything you need to live compassionately and healthfully. Please consider supporting such messages as these by becoming a patron. Thank you for listening.